The first trick Edison used to keep the filaments from burning out was to stop any oxygen from getting to them. That meant surrounding them with little vacuums. He bought pumps that would pull air out of glass containers, and he hired a top glass blower, and he improved the pumps, and before too long, there in his rural New Jersey laboratory, his team had created small glass containers in a shape that reminded onlookers of tulip bulbs, our light bulbs. They had less air inside than is found at the top of Mount Everest, or even several hundred miles higher above the Earth. By late 1879, he had small glass bulbs that held barely 1/1,000,000th as much air as the ordinary atmosphere. They still didn't work. Any metal filament Edison put at the center of one of those bulbs got so hot that it would burn or melt or crack or, despite the low air pressure in the bulbs, just sizzle along to failure. He realized he had to try something other than metal. For a while, Edison put strips of charred paper between two electrodes to see how well they would glow, and he also tried fragments of cork and then cotton threads. The cotton seemed especially promising, and for a long time he trumpeted that as his great success. But in time, that too failed, and in exasperation, he examined the paper fragments under his microscope, only to find that he couldn't magnify them enough to see the electrical sparks that he imagined running through them. All he had was the belief that any gushing electric particles would bump and slap along inside one of his filaments, hitting so hard that the wire or thread would get hot, just as the friction of rubbing your hands together quickly makes your palms heat up. He decided to search for a smoother filament. "I believe," he told his workers, almost in exasperation, "that somewhere in God Almighty's workshop there is a vegetable growth with geometrically parallel fibers suitable to our use. Look for it." And this his team did. He had more money than any of the other inventors working on electricity, those nearly limitless funds from his New York backers, and more important, he had the most motivated workers. Edison knew that his drive came from having been poor, and he generally hired others like him. There were tough, itinerant technicians who'd done who knows what in the Civil War. There was a bright London Cockney, Samuel Insull, and many others. The team had developed expertise in wire filaments and air pumps. Now they collected learned volumes on plant fibers. When hunting through books still didn't yield an answer, they started traveling. One worker to Cuba, another to Brazil, a third to China and other points east. And there, in south-central Japan, they came across the Madaki bamboo. It had a fiber far better for Edison's needs than platinum, nickel, or even the highly scorched cotton that had been the best till then. When Edison's men connected the strands of Madaki bamboo to the wires from the battery metals and turned the battery on so that powerfully charged electrons poured out, a faint glow came from the bamboo. When they slipped a glass bulb around the bamboo and pumped the air out of it, the bamboo strand got brighter and would glow and glow and glow. The platinum bulbs in Russia had lasted 12 hours at best. Efforts by Joseph Swan and others in England, around the same time as Edison's experiments, had reached a few dozen hours. But the Japanese bamboo, glowing away in its airtight bulb, as isolated as if it were in the vacuum of outer space, lasted for more than 1,500 hours. To make his invention truly practical, Edison and his men had to create numerous related inventions. Their first impulse, as always, was to steal from other patents. But they were venturing into such fresh territory that it wasn't always possible simply to copy other people's work. The electric bulbs had to be easily fitted into sockets, for example, yet no one else had needed to do that. So the team came up with an original way of modifying the screw stoppers of kerosene cans, hence our screw-top bulbs today. They attached the vacuum bulb so tightly to the screw that no air would seep in and make the glowing filament burn too fast. Still more inventions were needed. They needed a system of automatically measuring the electricity that was used, so they could then bill for it, and there had to be improved ways to power the bulbs, and soon Edison and his team had so much new ground to cover that, without realizing it, they'd almost entirely stopped copying patents. A single telephone could be invented by a single individual. But Edison's network of power stations required dozens of synchronized developments in switches, fuses, power lines, underground insulators, and the like. Edison wasn't a cheat anymore. He was a creator. This late 1870s surge of invention went far beyond the development of the telegraph a half century before. The telegraph had seemed infinitely powerful, Its series of innocuous clicks had changed business habits, financial markets, news gathering, and political organizations around the globe. Transferring information faster shrank the globe, just as a light bulb shrank the night. But no matter how far a telegraph signal's traveled, the only thing created at the other end of a wire was simply a clicking sound. Victorian engineers had been able to make huge objects move, as with locomotives and factory pistons, but that depended on big clanking steam engines. Now, in the final decades of the 19th century, they devised one way after another of pouring charged electric particles into new devices, and using that power to make them move in fresh, ingenious ways. The most powerful of these creations was the electric motor. There had been small, toy-like motors around for several decades, but as with the telephone, Edison and his team, along with many others, made them a lot better.